in a way, you could say that the sermon has already been given, the message has already been received. I heard the beautiful singing of the opening song that invited us first to experience loving kindness ourselves, and then others, and then ourselves as one. And then I heard the beautiful song that had in its refrain, "If we only knew, if we knew one another." And so in a way, I guess you could say the message of this morning has already been given. But on the other hand, words are necessary sometimes. So I'm going to do my best. And I want to thank you again for inviting me to be here. It's wonderful to be here on this sunny hillside by the sea with all of you. And I want to thank all of you for so many years who have come to this place again and again and again, imbuing it with your truth, your love, your devotion, and your feeling. You bring this place over and over and over again, blessing this place over and over and over again, coming here day after day, year after year, with this heart full of love. I think this hillside's going to have an invisible glow for quite a long time. So my message today was on mixing wisdom with compassion, a guide for modern times. My first 15 years of my career, I was a journalist, and my first managing editor used to say to me, yes, we have to bring the news, we have to bring the information, we have to help people understand the issues of the day. But in the final analysis, our real work is to raise the level of our community. We have to bring them up higher than they were before, with deeper and better knowledge than they had before. And I think that places like this do that. They raise the level of the community. So thank you. As I was thinking about this topic, the image of a yo-yo came to my mind. I know, what is that? It's a small toy with a string, and because of the movement, you unroll the small wooden spool, and at the bottom, it snaps back up into your hand. That's a yo-yo. So just had to explain. Sorry. And you could do around the world and everything. Okay. So in a way, it's a yo-yo world that we are living in these days. An artificial landscape of almost impossible emotions. We see children being taken away from their parents at the border. We see the injustice of people being hated for who they are, what their religion is, or who they love. And we see people who are harassed for doing such things as walking down the street, sitting in a library, waiting for friends in a restaurant while black. And that's just the human side. That's just the human side. We haven't even spoken yet about what's being done to the oceans and the skies. Our planet is heating up, and I think we're starting to get a little bit dirtier by the minute. In short, there's plenty of terrible news, plenty of terrible news to go around. So how does all of this terrible news make us feel? How does it make us feel? We feel compassion for those who are downtrodden and harmed, and we seek to lift them up. And we feel a burning anger for those who push those people down. And yet, on Sunday mornings just like this one, everywhere, and on any given evening at the yoga center, we are invited and reminded that love is the antidote to hate, and that to follow in the footsteps of the holy, we must love our neighbor as ourselves in spite of everything, or risk the loss of our human spirit. it's enough to give even the most limber person a little bit of spiritual whiplash. So, what are we to do? Must we choose between the teachings of love and compassion on the one hand and the thirst for justice on the other hand? Must it be either or can it be both and? Now, I'm a Buddhist. I think the outfit may have given it away. I'm a Buddhist, and we are famously pro-love and pro-compassion. We're the ones with mind training slogans such as drive all blames into one and be grateful to everyone. And our great spokesperson, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, famously said he was grateful to the communists who drove him out of his country because they taught him patience. Just let that sink in a minute. But in spite of all this, Buddhists are not etheric people. I'm part of a small Buddhist community in Columbus, Ohio, and one time a new guest came to visit us, and he said, you know, I was a little bit nervous to come here because I thought y'all be in white robes floating above the earth. I said, I've got some bad news for you. People will be rude to you during coffee time. I'm sorry. All right. So Buddhists are not all etheric people. We actually have a pragmatic side. A story from my own experience as a Buddhist student can illustrate this compassionate pragmatism. When I was a Dharma student, I sat in a lecture with a well-known Lama or teacher. La, by the way, it refers of the word Lama, means Lanama Depa. It's a Tibetan word meaning insurpassable. In Ma, means mother. So even the men are called mom. I think this is really kind of good. All right, sorry. So I'm sitting in this talk by this Lama, and a woman comes up to the question microphone and asks how to help her friend who was in a bad relationship but did not want to leave that bad relationship out of a feeling of practicing compassion toward the person who was being mean to her. The Lama, hearing this problem handed to him, he sat silently for a moment considering her words. But then he answered, just because you are compassionate doesn't mean you have to be wrong-headed. He said, it is never wrong to tell someone to stop hurting you. It's never wrong to tell someone to stop hurting you. This is a refreshing perspective. It means that compassion and justice do not have to be an either-or proposition. They can be a both-and. But this approach is not easy, and it's not undertaken without some effort. I have some bad news for you. Pragmatic compassion requires difficult thoughts, words, and actions from us. It demands something of us. In fact, the effort that we make to attain pragmatic compassion is going to be perhaps stronger and tougher than just about anything we've ever done before, because we have to practice compassion and wisdom together. From the example, the Lama was saying, just because you're compassionate doesn't mean you have to be wrong-headed. It's never wrong to tell someone to stop hurting you. So what he was getting at was that there is a place for truth. There's a place for it. And there's a place for being firm. So that is an example of pragmatic compassion. You can, as one of my friends says, love someone from a safe distance. And wish someone to have a nice day elsewhere. Okay, back to effort and what this is asking of us. Mindless compassion is easy. Mindless compassion is easy. There's right and there's wrong and nothing in between. We're good, they're not. Isn't that obvious to everyone? That's mindless compassion. We can do that. But for a lot of us, compassion informed by wisdom is kind of a new concept. But without wisdom, our compassion can go wrong. Look at the way we are today. We have lost a lot of the training we had in nonviolent communication. We've lost a lot of the training we had in nonviolent action. We've lost a lot of the training we had in nonviolent resistance to injustice. We've lost some of that. So that means we have to relearn it, regain it, reintegrate methods of being firm and standing in our place without anger. That's why I'm saying it's going to take the greatest effort we may have ever made. These days, because we have lost these skills, we allow words and actions of other people to enrage us. In fact, I think we've got a problem. I know, I don't mean to make light of the very real problems with substance abuse, but in some ways I'm wondering if anger isn't our new drug. If we think about it, it's fed by our entertainment industry and even by the news media. Think about the history of this movement. Tabloid press, sensational news gives way to Jerry Springer and people throwing chairs at one another across the stage. He thought that risk and high drama would make people watch, and it happened. Then there was reality television, which actually is kind of fun if you know that it's not real. I talked to a person who worked on a reality show, and she said, you know, we say it's not scripted, but we sort of tell them what's going to happen. And then, you know, if they're kind of nervous, we give them a few things to drink. And then we turn on the cameras and let it fly. So through our entertainment, we are becoming entertained by anger. And in fact, I'm a journalist, so I'm very interested in what the news is doing. And in the news, they found out really quickly on television that they had 24 hours of news to fill. This may be before your time. There was a time before 24-hour news. Really, there was. It was different then. There were these things called newspapers. It was really interesting. But in any case, I digress. After trying to fill 24 hours of news, they had to think of something. And they found that it was inexpensive to get people on a panel and have them argue with one another. It was really not expensive. And they didn't have to go, like, send reporters into the field and find out truth and facts and stuff like that. It was much more interesting. It's kind of like the reality television. Okay, just put a couple of people in the room together, make sure they're a little sleep deprived, give them something to drink, and let them go. So you could say now that because of all of this, rage is all the rage. And that's just only part of it. What's worse is that when we feel this anger, we feel that our anger justifies any reaction on our part to defeat who we perceive as our enemy. We think that everything is on the table and everything is possible to be used. But I have a Tibetan Lama named Trungpa Rinpoche who's been teaching for a long time, and he says something very wise about anger. He says, it is a dangerous friend. It makes you think, You're strong, you can take them. You're strong, you can beat them. You're smarter, you're better. So anger is like a false friend that makes us feel like we are stronger, better, and shall we even say superior to other people, the people we perceive as being our enemies. But anger is our dangerous friend. If we make the mistake of thinking that anger makes us better and stronger, we are more prone to mistakes. And really, the science is in. I know we like science. I like science. The science is in maintaining an artificial state of anger, which, by the way, is what you do when you hold a grudge. That person only hurt you once, and then you do it again and again and again by ruminating about it, but that's another matter. But artificially maintaining a state of anger actually increases the levels of negative chemicals in your body, hormones in your body that actually cause illness. I'm just saying, we should probably make it a new health movement. Let's see, what was it? Sitting is the new smoking? All right, and then anger is the new sitting. That doesn't work. Anger is, and never mind. We'll work on the slogan later. So, what are we to do? What are we to do? It is our illusion of difference that leads us into hatred. And once we fall into this hatred, we've sort of lost the battle and become that which we despise. So, how are we to fight injustice? How are we to maintain the goodness of our human spirit? By seeing anger as our common enemy. Anger is our common enemy. And making a commitment to take hold of it when it arises for us and ask it, "Are you really my friend? Is this really what I want to be doing? Do I really want to spend time with you?" And it really sounds a little silly to say it like that, but we have to start questioning our anger. We can't just let it bundle us into the back of the car and drive away with us. We have to start questioning it. Is this smart? Okay, Broadway quiz. Anybody seen Avenue Q? Bad Idea Bears. They're little creatures, they're puppets, that sit on the shoulder of the main character and give them bad advice. So if when we are getting ready to be carried away by our anger, if we can imagine somebody, doesn't have to be a bear, sitting on our shoulder saying to us, "Is this really what you want to do?" That's can helpful. But the other part of it is the truth that was sung about in these songs. That's the other part. Part of it is stopping to ask ourselves, is this what I want to do? Is this how I want to invest my energy? Do I want to invest my energy in this anger? Is this really helping me? And then to do the other thing, which is to see the suffering of other people. You ever seen that bumper sticker? Mean people are suffering. I don't know if you're... I saw that bumper sticker. I have that bumper sticker. Mean people are suffering, okay? You saw the other one too, I bet. Okay. So if we can imagine and see the evil deeds of our enemies as a manifestation of their own suffering, this will help us to hate them less. Doesn't mean we're not going to stand up for what's right, but that we might actually visualize them as small children who haven't yet bonded to their world. I have a friend who became a mother at the age of 38. She said, "You know, I'm really happy I became a mother at the age of 38 rather than 20 because," she said, "now when my two-year-old throws himself on the floor in a tantrum, I just look at him and say, 'Honey, knock yourself out.'" Now, that doesn't mean that by seeing terrible people who do terrible things as unhappy children, I'm not meaning to make light of the very real problems they cause. I'm just using humor to invite you to think about things differently. I'm using the humor to tell you to see the suffering child inside that person and tell them, it's time for your nap. The other thing is, it would be important for us to perhaps, to use a science word, titrate, which is to adjust our exposure to anger as entertainment. Honestly, I know people who watch the news as much as they possibly can until their eyes hurt. And they really like the arguments because it helps them find new arguments to argue with people online. Ooh, that's a good one. I'll use that. We have to see that these witty retorts that we value so much are building a wall around our hearts brick by brick. And it's imprisoning us in the illusion that we are different from those people. When I give Buddhist lectures, a lot of people ask me, what is the Buddhist concept of no self? And I say, well, that's kind of tough. The idea is that we don't have a permanent, solid, and unchanging self. It's always moving. It's a moving thing, always. And I say that one of the ways that you can tell that's true is that your ideas about things change moment to moment to moment to moment. And so what this means is that we have the opportunity in any given moment to question our anger. We have the ability in any given moment to ask ourselves if it's what we want to be doing. We have the presence of mind in any moment to turn off the arguing and to turn off our temptation to say that thing to that person we detest online or anywhere else. We have to find a way to restrain that and to act from the better angels of our nature. The Buddha believed that everyone has inherent value because they have a mind that has the capability and the potential to become a Buddha. Everyone in this room, including any insects that might have flown in, have the potential someday to become Buddha. So we have to summarize and to bring this to a close, we have to see that anger is not our friend and begin to question it when we feel it. Second, we have to see the suffering of our enemy and do everything we can to feel compassion for their suffering, even though we do not approve of their deeds. And finally, we have to find a way to stop hurting ourselves with our own anger by feeding it over and over and over again. Because if you look for someone to help, that's much better than looking for someone to yell at or to criticize. Because that's how it starts, isn't it? We criticize, we ostracize, we marginalize, we demonize, and then we start hurting them. Look at our mind, this mind of great potential, as our most precious child. If we can bring that child upright and begin to soothe its own suffering, our own suffering of anger, then maybe we'll be able to reach out and be present for people, for other people who are feeling it. To absorb it like an open window absorbs the shouts that come through it. And in that way, we can be part of the solution. We can be part of freedom for ourselves and for others, and for justice for ourselves and others. Because in the words of the great man, until all are free, none are free. So thank you.